This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon, it's 4pm and welcome to Radio Energy News. I'm David Hogg. On today's show, Facebook has imposed a ban on white nationalists, an investigation into sepsis has been announced, and with what was supposed to be our final show before the UK was expected to leave the EU, the Brexit chaos takes another twist. After last night's indicative vote stalemate, today Theresa May has laid out the groundwork for her deal to be voted on again next week. Today was another suspenseful day in the Brexit debate. Politicians, members of the public and experts have given their opinions on Brexit and discussed Theresa May's potential new deal with our correspondent Brendan Duggan.
I have not been briefed on any such plan, and the Honourable Gentleman wouldn't expect me to have changed my mind from the position that I enunciated on the 18th of March and which I reiterated on the 25th of March and which was underlined again by me from the chair yesterday. That remains the position so far as the convention is concerned.
Last night was a big night for Brexit, to say the least. It went a little something like this.
So the noes have it. So the noes have it. The noes have it. Noes, 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 the noes. So the noes have it. Order, order! I don't order! I'm finishing! Order!
MPs voted down all eight proposed Brexit alternatives, including a people's vote, remaining in the customs union, revoking Article 50, and a no-deal Brexit. On top of that, Theresa May put her job on the line in a sacrificial attempt to win over hard Brexiteers, claiming that if her deal is passed on its third attempt, she will step down as Prime Minister. Peas some of the harshest critics within her own party, such as Boris Johnson, who had previously resigned as Foreign Secretary in objection to the deal, and Jacob Rees-Mogg, who had this to say about her announcement.
I think there was a great deal of sympathy for the Prime Minister in the room and a recognition that she is both brave and dutiful and that there was a nobility in her statement, that she was putting the interests as she sees them of the country and the party first and sacrificing herself for that.
However, her proposed sacrifice did not satisfy everyone, with Arlene Foster, the leader of the party who are meant to be propping up her government, vowing that the DUP will not support her deal.
We warned her before she signed that withdrawal agreement. We wrote to her, you will recall, but she decided to go ahead. We cannot sign up to something that would damage the union.
We spoke to Mark Geeds, a political lecturer at the University of Edinburgh, to explain what the difference between indicative votes and legally binding ones are, and if we can expect more of the same.
It basically just gave the option of what do MPs think about an issue, whereas a legally binding motion, such as the meaningful vote, it's written into law that it has to that the meaningful vote has to get passed in order for the House of Commons or for Parliament to pass pass Brexit legislation. But with the indicative votes, that's quite a unique procedure which hasn't been done before, and it's so there's no legal weight behind it. Could be cast again. So this is the idea on Monday. So so the process to have those indicative votes are there was a two-stage process. One took place yesterday, and then the other day when this could theoretically take place is on Monday, where they could vote on either more specific version. I think it's probably a one-off occurrence because it's not really how Parliament normally operates, the traditional relationship between Parliament and the executive would be disrupted by having this more. So I don't think that it's a long-term or permanent fixed changing relationship between Parliament and government. So no, it's going to happen again on Monday, and then after that, I think it's unlikely that it would happen again.
We also asked him what we could expect next, and if those who are calling for Brexit to be stopped, such as Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, if they had any chance.
Theresa May tomorrow is going to be, so the reports in the media at the moment are saying that Theresa May is probably going to try to separate the withdrawal agreement from the political declaration, which is where the sticking point is, or part of the sticking point anyway. So I think that she's going to try to get the withdrawal agreement passed, but unfortunately that won't count as a meaningful vote because both have to, by law, both have to be passed in the House of Commons as a meaningful vote. You can revoke Article 50, triggering Article 50. You can revoke it if the UK government wanted to. It can do so unilaterally, and that's the simplest way of doing it. And that was one of the options put forward in the indicative votes, but it didn't receive enough support.
So what do the general public think of the latest developments?
It's a bit of a shambles.
I think it's a shambles.
It's a complete and utter shambles.
Shambles.
It's an absolute shambles.
It's a disaster.
I think it's a really complicated situation.
As long as we get out, that's the main thing. The original referendum said, get out. So for democracy's sake, I think we have to get out.
I think it's the worst decision in the history of the UK.
I think it's terrible, I think it's a disgrace, and I think that they should give the vote back to the people. Just a political game of chess, and everybody is having to pay the price.
Chaos.
Ghastly.
Get on with it.
It's a disaster.
I'm exasperated by it all and quite depressed.
Experts say that they have seen evidence of some employers who are unwilling to offer jobs to EU nationals in the false belief that they will lose their rights to work in the UK after Brexit. Theresa May has promised safety to EU nationals who apply for the settled status scheme. However, there is worries that those from vulnerable areas may not be aware. We spoke to immigration lawyer Sophie Barrett-Brown from Laura Devine Solicitors.
So EU nationals and their qualifying family members can remain in the UK. It's going to be different depending on whether we're in a deal or a no-deal scenario, but let's talk first about the no-deal scenario. The free movement continues until December 2020. They then have until June 2021 to make applications under the EU settlement scheme. If they have not done so by the cut-off date or by the deadline for applying, then they would no longer be lawfully present in the UK. Obviously, there is a significant education campaign going. This is a very topical issue. It's been covered in the media all the time. So on one level, one may think that lack of awareness may be less of an issue, but we're dealing with very large numbers here. So I think there certainly will be some people who just are not aware or have not understood exactly what they need to do by when. So that is definitely a concern, and for some groups it's much less likely to be an issue. So, particularly those who are in employment, the nature of our work, we're dealing with corporate clients all the time, helping them with informing their EU worker population and making sure that they know what they need to do by when. But of course there are other groups who just don't have that sort of access to information, more vulnerable groups, children in care, people who don't presently have homes, people who have learning difficulties, communication difficulties, elderly, vulnerable people. So, there are lots of groups in our society where there may be barriers to them receiving this information or understanding it, if they are receiving it, and being able to act upon it.
That's all your Brexit news, and now back to the studio.
Brendan Duggan there with the latest on Brexit. Scientists are currently working on discovering how to improve the survival rate of sepsis. Current patients with severe sepsis have a death rate of roughly 40 to 60%. The result of research will hopefully increase this. Our correspondent, Eve Beattie, reports.
Scottish scientists have launched an investigation into what genetically makes people more likely to die from sepsis. Researchers from Edinburgh University are carrying out a study that will look into clues how DNA variants govern sepsis recovery in order to create more effective treatments. Dr. Kenneth Bailey, the leading researcher from Edinburgh University, explains how the study will be conducted.
So I'm leading the research study. We want to understand what genes are specifically leading to individual susceptibility in order to better understand how to treat the disease. The first thing that we need is DNA from a very large number of carefully selected patients with severe sepsis. And achieving that requires us to recruit in intensive care units across the whole country.
NHS defines sepsis as a potentially life-threatening complication of an infection or injury. Dr. Ron Daniels, founder and CEO of UK Sepsis Trust, describes the symptoms.
When we need to start to think, could it be sepsis? The symptoms in adults spell the word sepsis. We have S for slurred speech or confusion, E for extreme pain in the muscles or joints, P for passing no urine, no water in a day, S for severe breathlessness, I for it feels like I'm going to die, and people really do describe that, and the final S for skin that's mottled or discoloured or very, very pale.
Colin Graham, Chief Operating Officer of the Fiona Elizabeth Agnew Trust, FEAT, highlights how many people are affected by the condition.
250,000 people in the UK are diagnosed with sepsis every year. And unfortunately, 52,000 people die every year in the UK from sepsis. In Scotland, it's around 4,000, just over 4,000 people. However, half the people that do survive sepsis go on to have long-term issues, so health issues. So if we can keep people out of hospital, it would save the NHS £79 million a year.
Leslie McBride from Wishaw was diagnosed with sepsis in April 2016. She shares her experience and the lasting impact.
But I mean, the doctors and nurses fought really, really hard just to stabilise me, and I can't describe the kind of effort that they put in for that. A lot of people that suffer sepsis have some difficulties when they come back round, especially if they've been in a coma, when it comes to talking and kind of word finding and things like that. So that kind of went on for a good 3 or 4 months. But 3 years down the line, I have took that experience and changed my life around.
People like Leslie are hoping that the study will make a difference to people who are affected by sepsis.
One of the largest social media networks is banning white nationalist content. Facebook is used by approximately 2.3 billion active users every month. The company has decided that it can no longer separate white nationalism and separatism from white supremacy and found overlaps in their own review of hate figures and organisations. Our reporter Veronica Contopolo has more details.
The social media giant is banning content relating to praise, support and representation of white nationalism and white separatism. The ban will be implemented by both Facebook and Instagram and is set to take effect next week. The move comes 2 weeks after the Christchurch mass shooting at a mosque in New Zealand. The man charged with the shooting is linked to a white nationalist group. A video of the attack was live-streamed by the man accused. It was removed but then re-uploaded by other Facebook users. Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, commented on the ban.
Arguably, these categories should always have fallen within the community guidelines of hate speech. But nevertheless, it's positive the clarification has now been made in the wake of the attack here in Christchurch.
But why are white nationalists targeted by the ban and not another ideology? We spoke to Jonathan Hearn, who is Head of Sociology and Professor of Political Science at the University of Edinburgh. Hearn, an expert on nationalism and national identity, explained what the terms used by Facebook entail and gave his thoughts on the ban.
Yeah, I think white nationalism is certain small and racist groups with a strong white identity, which, you know, has its own local variants. Technological problem for Facebook. It's not, they can't possibly be looking at every instance they have. And on top of that, you know, they do generally have a kind of very extreme kind of open information philosophy, you know, let a thousand flowers bloom, you know, that, you know, precisely what they're not about is, you know, controlling content.
Once the ban is implemented, US Facebook users that try to post or search for white nationalist or separatist content will instead be greeted with a pop-up, directing them to the website for the organisation Life After Hate. The non-profit organisation was funded in 2011 by former extremists and provides education and support to people looking to leave hate groups. The ban could potentially cause anger amongst freedom of speech supporters. The new regulations are set to take place next Wednesday.
Our news correspondent Alex Grant now joins us in the studio.
Thank you, David. Network Rail have today announced a new multi-billion dollar plan. Investment in an attempt to improve British railways for passengers. The plan will focus on improving punctuality and reliability through better assets, timetables and information to be achieved through a closer working relationship with train operating companies. Experts cleaning a supposed imitation of a Botticelli painting have today discovered it is in fact real. Extensive tests conducted by English Heritage have revealed it originated from Botticelli's 15th century workshop in Florence. This has now been confirmed by experts at both the Victoria and Albert Museum and the National Gallery after a consultation. A study has found toxic chemicals near the site of the Grenfell Tower disaster could cause asthma and cancer. Research revealed by the University of Central Lancashire showed that dust and debris from the deadly fire have badly polluted the surrounding area. Local resident Natasha Gordon commented,
I get really chesty coughs. The kids cough quite a bit. No matter where you walk around here, there's grass, there's soil, it's everywhere. And everyone that walks there is potentially at risk.
Thousands of passengers have been left stranded across the globe after WOW Airlines collapsed. The Iceland carrier ran out of business after failing to finalise an equity deal with investors this morning. The company is advising its passengers to book with other airlines and to wait for compensation. The nation of Brunei in Southeast Asia is to impose death by stoning as punishment for gay sex and adultery. This is part of the country's new controversial Sharia law, which will be implemented next week. The law also includes the amputation of criminals' hands if they are caught thieving. It's targeted towards the gay community and only applies to those who follow the Muslim faith. The president of Turkey, Tayyip Erdogan, is calling to stop banks from lending money to overseas financial institutions in an attempt to crack down on foreign currency speculation. This move has shown a rise in cost of offshore borrowing in Turkish currency by more than 1,000% overnight. £1 now equals 7.26 Turkish lira.
You're listening to Radio Energy News. It's still to come on today's programme. The BAFTA nominees have been announced. We'll have our sports correspondent in the studio and we'll have the latest on the recent measles outbreak and what it means for the vaccination discussion. But first, March has been Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month. Ovarian cancer is one of the most common cancers for women in the UK, killing over 4,000 every year. Despite these statistics, only 1 in 5 women in the UK can name a symptom of ovarian cancer. Our reporter Jessica Cleland has the story.
You may or may not have known that March has been Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month. During this awareness month, ovarian cancer charities in the UK all work together to increase awareness of the disease with women and GPs. They try to spotlight the disease and its symptoms through various activity over all social media platforms. Ovarian Cancer Actions is one of the many charities that raise awareness for ovarian cancer in the UK. I spoke to Carrie Wakefield, the chief executive, about why there is little awareness around the illness and its symptoms.
I guess what I would say about those symptoms is that quite often there's a real lack of knowledge around ovarian cancer. So both for women and some healthcare professionals, the symptoms can often be confused with other things.
Ovarian cancer occurs when abnormal cells in the ovary begin to multiply, which then creates a tumour. Carrie explains further.
Ovarian cancer is a cancer which starts in the ovaries. If caught very early, there's a 90% chance of survival. But once it moves outside of the ovaries into the rest of the body, which it can do quite quickly, unfortunately, that's when survival rates are not so good. That's one of the challenges that we are trying to address at Ovarian Cancer Action, because the 5-year survival rate is, when people get diagnosed, is only 36%, unfortunately. Around 7,300 women are diagnosed each year. Around 33,000 women are living with ovarian cancer around the UK.
Considering these statistics, I asked women around Edinburgh if they knew the symptoms of ovarian cancer.
Maybe, possibly. There's pain and like coloured discharge, maybe, or...
I don't know, irregular periods.
Bleeding, I don't know.
No, not really.
Pain in your... down there.
Bleeding or pain?
No, probably not. A few, just like general pain, I think irregular periods as well.
Maybe like bleeding or like bloating, like uncomfortable pain.
So why is it that we lack awareness of ovarian cancer and its symptoms? I spoke again with Carrie to try and find some answers.
Symptoms are bloating, stomach pain, feeling full more quickly or struggling to eat, and needing to wee more often. We probably don't take enough notice of our ovaries. I mean, breast cancer and other types of cancer, prostate cancer, those parts are visible, you can feel them, you can see them, and there are screening tools for some cancers as well. There isn't a screening tool for ovarian cancer at the moment, which is why the symptoms, awareness and watching out for those are really important. So there's a lot of work going on in research. I mean, we actually fund a lot of research at Ovarian Cancer Action. because we believe that in the long term, research is going to make the biggest difference. I mean, in the immediate future, symptoms awareness will make the biggest difference. Finding a screening tool, whilst it won't happen very quickly, would be transformational and game-changing for survival rates.
Although Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month is coming to a close, on the 8th of May, it's World Ovarian Cancer Day. On this day, Ovarian Cancer Actions will be handing out 33,000 roses around the UK to symbolise the 33,000 women living with ovarian cancer.
The NHS report that 1 in 100 Scottish children remain unvaccinated. This trend exceeds the borders of Scotland and has become an international controversy, resulting in the outbreak of measles across the world. As curfews have been set in place and deaths in and around the developing world rise, the anti-vaccination movement has been more vocal than ever before. Our correspondent Sarah El-Bashir reports.
Contrary to popular belief, the anti-vaccination movement predates social media echo chambers. In fact, it dates back to France in the 1700s. There's been a resurgence of the controversial stance on vaccinations as it has reached a global audience for the first time in history. As of midnight last night, a measles curfew was enforced in the New York County of Rockland, banning any unvaccinated individuals under the age of 18 from public spaces. The rising number of measles diagnoses has been linked to a general scepticism towards the practice. 153 cases have now been confirmed in the area. In countries where immunisation is not much of an availability, such as Madagascar, a measles outbreak has killed over 900 children. Furthermore, conflict areas such as the Ukraine have reported 3,000 cases of the fatal disease, causing UNICEF to issue an official warning. Voicing the concerns of many healthcare professionals regarding the increased cynicism towards immunisations, Dr. Mona Hajj of the Dumfries Royal Infirmary offered her insights towards the issue.
They are concerned about the possibility of vaccination causing autism, and it all comes from the infamous article or study published by Andrew Wakefield about the association of MMR vaccine with autism, which all kind of proved to be false and perhaps influenced by parents of children who have been vaccinated developing autism and seeking compensation from pharmaceutical industry. So concerns about autism, but there are other concerns about additives in the vaccinations like mercury, although the more recent versions of vaccine do not contain mercury, but there is concerns about the vaccines and mercury in vaccine or other additives in vaccine causing harm to children.
As Dr. Hajj explained, the growing anti-vaccination movement could be linked to floating internet conspiracy theories. Studies like that of Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who claims that the jab can cause autism, have spread across social media like wildfire and incited anxiety in worrisome parents of trusting the medicine. The World Health Organization described vaccine hesitance as the reluctance or refusal to vaccinate despite the availability of vaccines as one of the top threats to global health in 2019. We spoke to a parent who has resisted the immunisation jabs for her children.
It's if you introduce someone to a disease naturally, then you've got your natural body's resources to combat it. Delivering that into the bloodstream has got so many bad effects. And has anyone stopped to consider or done any research in finding out why allergies and asthma and things like that is so prevalent now?
Many have criticised the academic research behind the anti-vaccination movement, so we reached out to Dr. Oliver Mueller, an anti-vaccination advocate with a published book. This is what he had to say on the matter.
What parents like me are concerned about is that we believe the safety studies aren't done the way they should be. For start, vaccines are hardly ever tested against a proper placebo. They are tested against other vaccines. They are tested against vaccine ingredients, but are hardly ever against a saline placebo. And I think it's very reasonable to ask that it should be done and why it's not done. There's a lot of people like me who have looked at very reputable sources of information, and those people, I feel, should be able to sit down with the more reasonable side on the pro-vax argument and have a calm and measured debate.
The BAFTA TV Award nominations were announced today, dominated by thriller series Killing Eve, which achieved 14 nominations. It was closely followed by A Very English Scandal, Patrick Melrose and Bodyguard. Our correspondent Eve Maloney reports.
Killing Eve, a very English scandal.
Patrick Melrose.
Bodyguard.
And the BAFTA goes to...
BBC One's Killing Eve is respectively fronting this year's nominations, including Best British Drama and Best Leading Actress.
I know you're a psychopath.
You should never tell a psychopath they are a psychopath. It upsets them.
The thriller series follows an MI5 employee hunt down a psychopathic assassin played by Jodie Comer, who will battle for Best Leading Actress against Keeley Hawes in The Bodyguard. British journalist Caitlin Moran reveals why she believes Killing Eve has become an unexpected success.
On paper, you would not think that that would become like an absolute flagship show. It was launched very sort of quietly. The Bodyguard was taking all the attention. It's about a bisexual assassin. The plot is absolutely unpredictable and bizarre, and yet there it is with 14 nominations.
For Best Leading Actor, Hugh Grant is amongst the nominees for playing disgraced Liberal leader Jeremy Thorpe in BBC One's comedy drama A Very English Scandal, which was respectively up for 12 nominations.
Mr. Jeremy Thorpe,
you're the youngest man to lead a British political party in more than a century.
I've come to tell you about my homosexual relations with Jeremy Thorpe.
Be careful now, because I'm not sure any boy's worth ending up in prison for.
Competing against Hugh Grant is Benedict Cumberbatch for his lead in Patrick Melrose, which received 6 nominations. The Sky Atlantic series is based on semi-autobiographical novels, focusing on a British upper-class man struggling to overcome his addictions and demons. Bodyguard, which is up for 5 nominations, including Best British Drama, centres around Police Sergeant David Budd, a heroic British Army war veteran suffering from PTSD, hired to protect the Home Secretary.
I've been a copper, I've been a soldier. For what? Politicians, cowards and liars.
Looks like the Home Secretary couldn't be in safer hands.
The 2019 BAFTA TV Awards will air on Sunday, 12th of May on BBC One. Until then, we are left in suspense as to who will be taking home this year's awards.
Now, the latest sport highlights on Radio Energy.
Our sports correspondent, Jake Gray, joins me in the studio.
Thank you, David. Alex McLeish is to be sacked as Scotland manager following a dismal start to the Euro 2020 qualifying campaign. Scotland supporters came home from Kazakhstan disappointed last week after Scotland lost 3-0. On Sunday, they lost 2-0 to the world's lowest-ranked team, San Marino. Scottish sport journalist Matthew Elder told us what he thought of McLeish's reign as manager and who should replace him.
It's been pretty unimpressive. I think he was the wrong man at the start. He never have been appointed in the first place. He did reasonably well, I would say, to finish top of the nation's group. Anything other than that would have been regarded as a bit of a disaster, considering it was Israel and Albania that they were up against. So that would be a minimum expected that he got there. And then the last result against Kazakhstan, going down as one of Scotland's worst results in history. For me, it would be Steve Clarke. He's shown what he can do with average players at Kilmarnock. I think we'll accept that Scotland have probably got average players in the international arena. So any manager that can take players like that and get the best out of them and have them punching above their weight, I think has to be the best candidate.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been appointed permanent manager of Manchester United following a successful spell as interim boss. The club's former striker was placed in charge after Jose Mourinho was sacked in December. United midfielder Paul Pogba has spoken about the impact his new boss has already had on the team.
The result has been great. I have a great relationship with him. He has a great relationship with the players. So, yeah. When a player is happy, obviously he wants to keep being happy. So, yeah, totally deserve it.
Hearts defender Ben Garucho is out for 10 months with cruciate ligament damage. The Australian picked up the injury during a training session yesterday. He is the third Hearts fullback to be injured this season. The Lawn Tennis Association have been criticised by MPs today as a document from their rebrand did not mention Sir Andy Murray's legacy or any of his achievements. The 36-page piece was released last Friday to outline the new vision of the governing body of British tennis. And in cricket, the England women's team have made their second highest score in the 2020 league as they beat Sri Lanka by 96 runs. England took the victory for the 10th time on their tour of India.
Jake Gray there with the sport. And finally, an Edinburgh shop owner is heartbroken over the death of his dog, who had become a mascot for the business and a local celebrity. Our correspondent Lucy Van Drome has more.
This morning at Caden Heads, a Cowgate whisky shop, there was something missing from the window of this local establishment. Yesterday afternoon, shop owner Alan Murray faced heartbreak at the loss of his beloved Scottish terrier, Maggie. Over the years, the 14-year-old dog had become somewhat of an Edinburgh celebrity. Maggie accompanied Murray to work each day and napped in the cushioned window seat of the quaint shop. Her presence encouraged both tourists and locals alike to enter and say hello.
Because she sat in the window most of the day. And as customers came in, she would jump down, speak to them, and then jump back up again. So, I mean, there's a primary school down the street, so the kids, when they were coming out of school in the afternoon, used to come up and knock on the window and speak to her, and sometimes come in to speak to her.
Tourists from all around the globe came to visit Maggie.
In fact, there was one day some Japanese people came in and they said, "Oh, we see your dog." And I said, "Well, yeah, she's in the window." And went, "No, we saw her in a magazine in Japan. There was an article about her in Japan." So she was well known, definitely well known. Yeah, she is missed. And one funny thing is Robert that works here, for some reason, she had a dislike of Robert's feet and used to, every time he walked near her, she would pounce and bite, try and bite his feet. But apart from that, no, she was very friendly. And it's strange without her here.
Online reviews of Cadenhead's whiskey shop often mention Maggie.
The owner has the loveliest little Cairn Terrier, Maggie. I shed a tear when I left. Maggie is 12 years old and I'm not sure whether I'll be back in Scotland before she retires. Do visit the store. It is charming.
I was charmed by the quaintness of the shop, the lovely staff, and the taste of scotch, but I especially love the dog.
Murray plans to release a commemorative whisky in honour of Maggie to keep her memory alive. Lucy Van Dome for Radio Energy.
And to round up, a brief recap of today's headlines. As the Brexit debate rumbles on, Theresa May is looking to bring her deal to MPs for a third time. Scientists are working on how to increase the survival rates of sepsis, and Facebook are imposing a ban on white nationalistic content. That's all we have time for on Radio Energy News today. Thank you all for listening and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Get in touch. Go on. Tweet at Radio ENRG. Email radioenrg@gmail.com.